following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Okay. Rock, rock, rockin' Nicole. Yeah. Rock, rock, rockin' Nicole. Rock, rock, rockin' Nicole. Oh, once she grabs, she won't let go. Rock, rock, rockin' Nicole. None of that soft stuff. Rock, rock, rockin' Nicole. None of that heavy metal stuff. Rock, rock, rockin' Nicole. Just a little bit of jazz. Rock, rock, rockin' Nicole.
Just
I
like
love
that.
It. That's all right. Welcome, welcome, welcome to a Thursday, everybody. And it's not just any Thursday, but a special Thursday because Howie Klein's back today. You know, Howie's been gone for about a month. We'll check in with him. Actually, we'll bring him on earlier than usual because he's been gone a month and there's a lot to talk about various topics. So we will get him on in about 10, 15 minutes or so. I thought, though, today we would start with a song because I found a really good one. It's from favorites of ours, you know, the Parody Project, who's been doing this a long, long time. And, well, this one just fits the occasion. So so everyone can comfortably get in the room. I know they're late coming in here today. So let's start with the Parody Project.
Roll down Supreme Court causes a shock. Voting rights gone, the court causes a shock. EPA fall, the court sends out a shock. We're gonna turn back history's clock tonight. When the clock strikes one, the noise they'll make. Burning women at the stake. We're gonna stop, stop, stop the clock tonight. We're gonna turn those hands till they point right. Gonna turn, turn back the clock tonight. When the clock strikes two, chance of your life, collecting grand, turning in your wife. We're gonna stop, stop, stop the clock tonight. We're gonna turn those hands till they point right. Gonna turn, turn back the clock tonight. When the clock strikes three, four, and five, they'll kill anyone who's not pro-life.
Oh, yeah.
Stop, stop, stop the clock tonight. We're gonna turn those hands till they point right. Gonna turn, turn back the clock tonight.
Everybody sing.
She's a witch.
She looks like one.
Yeah, she looks like one.
Bring her forward.
I'm not a witch. I'm not a witch.
But you are dressed as one.
They dressed me up like this.
And this isn't my nose. It's a false one.
If you survive six, still alive at seven, the Inquisition sends you straight to heaven.
Nobody expects the Spanish Inquisition. Our chief weapon is surprise.
Gonna turn, turn back the clock tonight. Take care when the clock strikes eight. It's you the Supreme Court will terminate. We're gonna stop, stop, stop the clock tonight. We're gonna turn those hands till they point right. Gonna turn, turn back the clock tonight. Alito's inspiration is divine. From the year 1669. We're gonna stop, stop, stop the clock tonight. We're gonna turn those hands till they point right. Gonna turn, turn back the clock tonight.
Chief weapon is surprise. Surprise and fear. Fear and surprise are two weapons. Our fear and surprise and ruthless efficiency are three weapons. Our fear and surprise and ruthless efficiency and an almost fanatical devotion to the Pope are four.
When the clock strikes 10, 11, 12, into the dark ages we will delve. We're gonna stop, stop, stop the clock tonight. We're gonna turn those hands till they point right. Gonna turn, turn back the clock tonight. Turn, turn back the clock tonight.
Tell me, what do you do with witches?
Burn!
Why do witches burn? Because they're made of wood. Good!
So, how do we tell whether she is made of wood? Build a bridge out of her!
Ah, but can you not also make bridges out of stone?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Does a wood sink in water?
No, no. No, it floats! It floats! Throw her into the pond!
What also floats in water?
A duck!
Exactly. So, logically, if she weighs the same as a duck, she's made of wood.
And therefore...
a witch!
A witch!
You know, the parody project. They do great work, and that one has a little extra oomph because of the Monty Python stuff included. I believe that scene was from Life of Brian, which happens to be one of my favorite all-time movies, not just Monty Python. And I saw that and I said, oh, I got to play that because, number one, it was very well done. And number two, I found this other video this week. Actually, David sent it to me. My husband, he's like, did you see this? And it's brilliant. It's somebody who repurposed a scene from Monty Python and the Holy Grail that we all know, that I know if I played it here in its, you know, full video form, I'd get copyright violated because they don't like it when you play like the footage and the audio. So let me play it for you because it's so well done. It's a guy on Twitter. He's at Steven Voiceover. I'd never heard of him before, never saw anything from him before. And all right, it's the scene when King Arthur, they go up to the castle because they believe the Grail is inside. And I'm just going to play you the soundtrack. I'm not going to play the video, but it works, audio only. And if you've seen Monty Python and the Holy Grail a fraction of as many times as I have, you will recognize this scene from the sound alone.
Hello!
Hello, who is it?
We are from the Federal Bureau of Investigation. Whose castle is this?
This is the castle of Donald J. Trump. This is Castle Mar-a-Lago.
Go and tell your master we have been charged by God with a sacred quest. If he gives us food and shelter for the night, he can join us in our quest for secret nuclear codes.
Well, I'll ask him, but I don't think he'll be too keen. He's already got one, you see.
What? He says they've already got one. Are you sure he's got one?
Oh, yes, he's a very nice.
I told them we already got one. Well, can we come up and have a look?
Of course not. You are federal types.
If you do not show us the code, we will take your castle by force.
You don't threaten us, FBI pig dogs. Go and boil your bottom, the son of a silly person. I'll blow my nose at you, so-called FBI. You and all your federal kniggets.
If you do not agree to my commands, then I shall take...
Jesus Christ! Brilliant, right? And it's even better if I would have shown you the video, because this guy, Steven Voiceover, obviously does voiceovers, and he synced it perfectly. It was just, it's beautiful. Here's my problem. I start exploring his Twitter stream because this was quite brilliant. He's a Trumper. I swear, he's able to poke fun at the Mar-a-Lago not a raid, but he's a Trumper. And I just said, you know, he's like, oh, feel free to check out my other stuff. And I'm like, nah, sorry, I'm not going to be following you. Just can't. I said, your comedy is smart. Too bad you're not. Anyway, I thought I'd share it with you because it was quite brilliant. I mean, really, really funny. Run away! Run away! Yeah, so that happened. Yeah. Funny, though. I'll give credit where credit is due, but I'm not going to be, you know, following Steven Voiceover. It is disappointing, right? Isn't it disappointing when you find somebody who's talented and then you find out they're a Trumper? I mean, I would have asked him to explain, but yeah, it wasn't even worth it. So there is breaking news today. Let's get serious for a moment. Joe Biden did what we thought he would do, and he announced that he'll be signing an executive order to excuse basically $10,000 of student loan debt to people who owe money and earn less than $125,000 a year, $200,000 for a couple. And if you previously received a Pell Grant, then that amount goes up to $20,000 a year. Now, I got to tell you, some people are not very happy about it. And actually, I can see both sides of the argument. If you've listened for a long time, you may recall that when this topic first came up, I, too, was not overly enthusiastic, let's put it that way, about the idea of forgiving student loans, thinking that if people took out the loan, then they're responsible for it. Here's the thing. If they were only held to pay back the principal, the amount of the loan that they took out, that would be one thing. But when you take out a loan, and I know because I've been trying to get a loan recently to consolidate debt and to move and stuff like that, and the rates that they charge are usurious. They are criminal. And then I went back through and I looked at what I pay for credit card rates. Oh my God, it is criminal. The lowest, and I've got great credit, the lowest rate on a credit card I have is my Discover card, and it's 12.99%. That is the exception, and that's low. I have cards going up to 29.99%. You know what I'm doing with that card, right? Yeah. It's history. But, you know, to do a loan, same kind of thing. The amount they're asking for is ridiculous. And what happens with this college loan debt, it's interest increase upon increase. And people who start out owing like $40,000 after 20 years, all of a sudden owe $60,000. Well, what this executive order does is, again, it forgives $10,000 for anyone earning up to $125,000. It goes up to $20,000 for a Pell Grant. The limit is $250,000 if you're a couple. In addition, the White House will extend the moratorium on monthly payments and interest, they say, for a final time. That, in other words, they won't do it again through the end of the year, through December 31st. So that's good news. And there's one other part that is not getting a lot of attention, but according to some of the stuff I read, this is probably going to help more people in total because this applies to everyone. Repayments will be capped at no more than 5% of discretionary income, and it raises the amount of income considered non-discretionary. So I guess making your discretionary income amount lower, thereby lowering your the ceiling on what you have to pay, right? It also covers unpaid monthly interest, and it forgives balances after 10 years instead of 20 years, which I guess is what it is now. And they're saying overall this plan could impact 45 million American borrowers. But, you know, the Republicans, for the most part, a lot of us are the Democrats who don't like it also. But the Republicans are the ones really, you know, really being pissy about it. And some of the stuff they're coming up with is just plain ugly. One of the Fox, not news reporters, at the press briefing today asked Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre if the economy is doing so well, as you keep saying, then why do this now? In fact, ooh, I have that clip. I love it when that happens. Here's how that went.
We're not in a recession because we've got, you know, record job market, record low unemployment, businesses investing in America at record rates. Mm-hmm. So why are those appropriate conditions to forgive student debt?
Well, thank you for laying out all the work that the president has done. That is 1,000% correct. Uh-huh. But we've also said that we know that some people are still suffering. You've heard us say that too. Yes, the economy can be turned back on, and we've created, to what you've just laid out, nearly 10 million new jobs since the president took office. That matters. The economy is stronger than it's been in some time. But we have said that, you've heard the president say that, there's still some folks who need a little bit more help.
Yeah, there are some folks, a lot of folks, who need a little bit more help. And, you know, what I loved is what Joe Biden said. Oh, shoot, I didn't pull that clip. Hold on one second. Let me see if I think I had it up yesterday. Let me see if I can bring it up real quick. Because, you know, when he made an announcement yesterday. Of course, I don't have it there. Hold on. I'm going to find it. It would be better if I could actually see better. But bear with me. Joe Biden, you know, was announcing something. And as he's leaving the room, the reporter, one of the reporters, tried to ask him, do I even have it here? Tried to ask him, maybe I don't. I love it when I do that. Oh, maybe I have video of it. Here it is. Okay. I have it on video.
Mr. President, is this unfair to people who paid their student loans or chose not to take out loans?
Is it fair to people who, in fact, do not own multi-billion-dollar businesses that see why these guys give them all a tax break? Is that
Ooh,
fair?
Ooh, is that fair?
What do you think?
What do you think?
What about people who pay
She didn't
their
answer
loans,
that.
And
he leaves the room. So, yeah, so that was, is it fair to people who've paid their loans or who don't have the debt to help people who are struggling? And Joe Biden says, is it fair for the wealthiest among us to, you know, keep getting these tax breaks? See, it depends how you frame the question. Anyway, tomorrow, I'm going to leave some time open tomorrow for phone calls because this is a contentious subject. There are some people who've had a lot of student loan debt, who paid it off, and now they resent that the government might help others who are struggling. And then there are Republicans who think that, the government shouldn't do anything to help you. So tomorrow I will leave aside some time so we can take calls on it, because I know that, we all have different opinions there. So we'll do that. I'm not going to do it today because Howie Klein is back. Yay. And I'm going to bring him on early because he hasn't been here in a month. And we got a lot of stuff to talk about. So with no further ado, let's do this.
Are you a multinational corporation hungry for a treat? Well, come on down to Schmucky Chucky's, where you'll personally be seated by Chuck Schumer himself.
So many dishes, and they're all fresh.
You're gonna love our Blue Dog special, the Dino Burger, because we say so.
A good hamburger and french fries.
And every burger comes with a side order of...
grits. I love grits. I love anything with corn. It's corn.
All for only $50,000. Wash it all down with a Dirty Debbie.
9/10 water, 1/10 orange juice. After a week or two, you drink this, it's 200 calories and it's acidic.
And wipe your mouth with a tissue print of Glass-Steagall. For dessert, try our DNC tarts.
Little cookies, tell the quality of that.
Most restaurants give you a mint, but at Schmucky Chucky's, you get complimentary.
Sweet and low.
Who picks up the tab for all this? Find out now with Howie Klein of DownWithTierney.com on the Nicole Sandler Show.
Hey, Howie Klein.
Hey, Nicole Sandler. So nice to be back.
Oh, it's so nice to have you back. Welcome back, first of all. How are you feeling?
Feel great.
Yeah? Good.
Yeah.
I did explain a very, very, just sketchy details that you had to have surgery. It was thyroid cancer this time?
Yes, I had thyroid cancer, and I had to have my thyroid removed.
Ooh.
So thyroid cancer is a cancer that's very easily treated. But any kind of surgery for the person who gets operated on is a drag. And this, they open your throat up, they take out the thyroid, they've got to figure out how much medicine you need to take every day for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
And it's different for everybody. So they have to, keep having you come in for blood tests all the time until they figure out that they've got the right dose of this thing called Synthroid.
Oh, yeah.
Which handles the functions that the thyroid handles, and the thyroid handles everything. I mean, everything. I mean, at first they gave me way too much, and I was literally dropping a pound a day. I was so excited.
Oh, wow.
Because the thyroid regulates how much weight you can lose. And I'm really careful with what I eat and everything, and I can never lose any weight. And then I was eating the exact same way, and I was dropping a pound every single day, and I was just going crazy with happiness. And then the doctor said, no, 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 that's not
that's too much, right? Yeah, that doesn't work. So,
no, so now they lowered the lowered it to what they think it should be. It's probably going to stay at where it is. And now I've gained back all the weight that I lost. Plus,
oh, of course, it's always something. But I know that you were going to come back on like a couple of weeks ago, but your voice was still scratchy. You had no voice from you know, having your thyroid removed. That's major surgery to your throat area.
Yeah, basically what it was I couldn't really talk for a long time without getting my voice getting really tired. So that's what it was. That was a few weeks ago. And then last week I could have come on because I felt as good then as I do now.
Right.
But I had another trip to the hospital to give more blood.
Oh, I gotcha. Well, you know, that's reasonable. So you're here today. Now, here's the thing. I won't be here next week because I have to have surgery. Thankfully, it's not cancer this time, but I got a weird thing going on with my right eye, and I have to have surgery on it to make sure I don't go blind. So it's always something, isn't it?
I hope it worked out well.
You and me both.
So you want me to do the show by myself? Is that what you're saying?
Do you want to?
Not really.
No, I think next week I'm going to be off Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and hopefully by the following Monday I'll be back, you know, ready. I may have a patch over my eye, and I'll say arr, talk like a pirate or something, but I should be able to come back the following week. So we'll just miss one week. But
4 weeks.
Yeah.
It's funny, everybody tells me that the scar that I have on my neck, you know, for a woman, it would be a disaster. For a man, it's like, you know, it just shows character.
Well, that's always the case. You know, men age gracefully. Women get old. Men get distinguished. Women get old. That's the double standard we have. You know, I famously do not dye my hair, but I've got good salt and pepper, you know, hair. But, you know, guys... you look at somebody like George Conway and you go, come on, don't do that. Paul McCartney, too, for the longest time. Thankfully, he finally stopped doing it. I think men look ridiculous when they dye their hair dark to say they're not aging. But
it was funny because at Warner Brothers, I noticed that all of my peers were all dyeing their hair. And these were guys who were, some of whom were older than me and some of whom were a bit younger, but basically the people who were around my age. And it was always so strange because I've never dyed my hair either.
You don't have hair.
What did you say?
I said you don't have hair.
Right. Well, I do. I have some.
Oh, a little bit. Right.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding you. But I'm glad you brought up Warner Brothers because actually, while you were out... The former head of Warner Brothers Records, Warner Music Group, Mo Austin. No,
that's a separate thing.
Oh,
Warner Music Group separate.
Okay,
the Warner Brothers Records. You were right the first time.
Okay, so I was right the first time. Mo Austin passed away. Now Mo Austin is known industry wide and beyond as like the greatest of all time. Right? He was. He might be the last of the really good music executives where it was all about the music. It was about the artist. You worked for him for years, and I wanted to ask you about him.
Oh, great. I love to talk about Mo. So do you want funny stories, or do you want me to tell you why he's great?
All of it. Both.
Let's start with why he's great.
Okay.
So before I went to work at Warner Brothers, I had a little independent label called 415.
Mm-hmm.
And we made a distribution deal with Sony. At the time, it was called CBS Columbia Records.
Right.
And I learned everything never to do to artists and every way to not run a record company with my years working with CBS.
Mm.
They were the worst. They were the pits. And there were some nice people there who I liked and who, in fact, one of them still writes every night for Down with Tyranny. He's the guy who does, who's known as Noah, and who does the Midnight Meme. So I'm not saying that everybody who worked there was terrible. He was great. He's a great guy.
Right.
And there were others who, you know, not so many, but there were others who were really good too. But generally, it was a very, very toxic environment. And it was all about Everything was about the executives. They literally hated the artists. They hated them and wanted to screw them over. And everything that was done at that company was dictated by the executives. It was all about serving their own interests. And that was so disgusting to me that I finally decided I can't take it anymore, and I was going to drive my van down to Tierra del Fuego at the tip of Latin America. And just as I was getting ready to do that, I got hired by Warner Brothers to come and run one of their divisions. And as I got to know Mo, what I learned from him was that the company was there to serve the artists.
Right.
There to serve the employees, was there to serve the stockholders, was there to serve the consumers, our customers, was there to serve society. That's
what a concept, first, right?
Employees second. That is what that's what the company was all about. In terms of the executives, that they would be taken care of by doing a good job for the other five.
Mm-hmm.
That was Mo's attitude. You do a good job for the artists. You do a good job for your employees. You do a good job for your customers, etc. And then the executives would get taken care of, and they were very, very well taken care of. Whereas in the other companies, all of the other companies, everybody was, you know, hopping and jumping from one company to another. No one who got a job at Warner Brothers ever wanted to leave.
Right.
Because it was that kind of a company. So, you know, that was a very, very important lesson. And it was the opposite of the way CBS, now Sony, treated the record industry.
Mm-hmm.
And I was really very, very happy with that. When Mo left, and then the head of the Warner Music Group called all of the senior people together for a meeting. I should say he denies the story that I'm about to tell you. He's on the record denying it.
Okay.
But there were a lot of witnesses. He basically said, I'm talking about Steve Case.
Oh, okay. Oh, I remember right. That name. Yeah.
He said, you know, those days are finished. This is about us now. We're all going to become rich.
Oh, God.
And I'm looking around the room, and I'm thinking, there's nobody here who isn't rich.
Right.
Everybody in this room is very, very rich. Very, very, very rich. What the hell is he talking about? And it just got worse and worse as he spoke, you know, and using really foul language, you know, just Sony language. What we're going to do to the artists. What we're going to do in terms of everything. I mean, under Mo, we had the attitude towards, for example, towards employment. I'm sorry, insurance.
Mm-hmm.
If something new was offered by the insurance industry that was good and would be useful to our people, we would get that. So, like, you know, suddenly when you know, fathers could have time off if their wife gave birth.
Uh-huh.
We were the first company to grab that.
Probably still the only one, right?
Well, I hope
may
not
be still.
Actually, more likely I know they don't do that anymore.
Oh,
because when Steve Case came in that first day that he met with us all, he said, if the state requires that we spend $9.07 per employee on insurance, we do not spend $9.08. And
oh, God.
I mean, you know, we were spending like, you know, $25. So it was like, you know, the company went from being the most artist friendly, the most employee friendly company that there was to just being just another corporate entity. As we walked back, this happened on the Warner Brothers lot. So because it was for not just for the record company, it was actually for everybody. He wasn't the head of the Warner Music Group. He was the head of AOL Time Warner.
Oh, right, AOL Time
Warner.
So
anyway,
Warner.
As we were walking back to our building, which was next door, I walked back with my boss, and Mo had gone already, and the new chairman was Russ Thiret, who is you know, a Mo disciple.
Right.
And I said to Russ, I'm leaving. I don't want to work here anymore. And he said, yeah, I don't either. He said, but don't leave before I do. So
wow.
I stayed a little longer, but that day of that my first meeting with Steve Case, you know, made it clear to me that I did not want to work at that company anymore.
Right. Well, and Russ died just like last year, didn't he?
Yes.
Yeah.
Did.
So those were, I mean, it was known, Mo and Russ, they were the guys you wanted to work.
Don't forget Lenny.
Mo, Lenny, and Russ. It was like the Pep Boys, Lenny, Mo, and Russ. They were the guys you wanted to work for, Lenny Warnaker, right?
Yep.
And
really great guy. And he was younger than the other two.
Okay. So Lenny's still
and,
with us.
You know, he's, you know, I had dinner with him a few weeks ago, and he's still in great shape.
Good.
And consults Warner Brothers Records.
Oh, how
now.
Funny.
But it's not the same kind of company. It's not the same company. It's a, it's just like every other company now. I'm not saying it's worse. It's just like all of them.
Right. And so, you know, it's known in the industry. Warner Brothers was the place where artists wanted to go because that was the label that nurtured artists. And
there was a reason for that, by the way. Mo started at Reprise, not at Warner Brothers.
Okay.
And Reprise was a separate company. And Reprise was started by Frank, with Mo, by Frank Sinatra. So
right.
Mo and Frank Sinatra started it together. And Frank Sinatra had been on Capitol, and he was sick and tired of being bossed around and treated like a commodity. And having people at Capitol say, and this is Frank Sinatra. We're not talking about some, like, you know, struggling young artist
right.
who's, you know, going to be beaten up by everybody at the company. We're talking about a big, major, major star being told, this is the orchestra you're working with. Mm. This is the producer. And here's a list of songs. Go back and memorize them.
Oh, God.
And he couldn't stand it anymore. And he finally said, the hell with you guys. He left Capitol and started his own label, Reprise, as an artist sanctuary. And all the artists that he brought along with him were his pals, and the whole idea of Reprise was to have artistic freedom. And then I was the next president of Reprise after Frank
right?
Sinatra.
Wow.
And I took that very, very seriously and did my best to always make sure that the artist had the last word. You know, one of the ways that manifests itself, by the way, so people understand what I'm talking about, is in the choice of singles. Right. The artists work sometimes for years writing songs and developing songs. And then they go in and they record them. And sometimes the record company will come in and they'll listen and they'll say, this is the single. We
right.
have to put this out first.
Right.
And the artist says, no, this is the single. So the record company doesn't necessarily do this just gratuitously. You know, they're trying to think what is going to work. On the radio.
Right, because that's what the single is.
No one really knows.
No, you don't know until you get there. And, you know, you could ask radio people. But for those who are saying, well, nobody buys singles. It's not about that. It's about what track they work. You guys, the record label, works to radio to get them to play because they want everyone playing the same one because repetition makes hits.
Right, and then there'll be a second one, hopefully, yeah. if the first one's a hit.
And
the whole idea is to sell the albums.
Right.
This is in the past. I mean,
yes.
the way the record industry works now is completely different. I'm talking about, you know, a couple of decades ago.
Right.
So, for example, the way it was done at CBS / Sony was if the artist didn't like the single that the record company chose for them, too bad. They don't get a vote. End of story.
Right.
And the label would put out whatever they wanted. No discussion. At Warner Brothers, what I would say to my A&R guys and my radio guys, go talk them into it. Explain what you're trying to accomplish. And if you can convince them and they say, okay, great, we'll put out the song that you want to put out. If you can't convince them, we're putting out the song that they want to put out. The artist always had the last word. And some, you know, I always respected artists who stuck to their guns. Like, you know, when I was at Sire, for example, you couldn't tell Madonna. I mean, she would listen, but she picked the single always. And all of the artists that were very, very successful, not necessarily a one-hit wonder, maybe that was a different thing, but the artists who were successful and had successful careers, they always picked their own song.
Mm-hmm.
Now, sometimes those songs might be the one that the label was pushing. Sometimes the radio guys or the A&R guys would talk the artist into it. Fine, that was a great situation. Then everybody's happy. But at Reprise, while I was there, the artist always had the last word. End of story.
Yeah. Now,
what I'm talking about when I say, you know, it's a refuge for an artist-friendly label.
Yes. And you worked with some of the biggest. I mean, we've talked about Clapton. We've talked about Neil Young. The list, I mean, the artists that were on Reprise. Now, did you work personally with Sinatra, too?
No. He was gone by the time I got there.
I see.
I only met him one time, and it was funny. Although I did work with him in a way. I'll tell you about that in a second. But I only met Sinatra one time, and it was at a U2 concert. They weren't on the label, but I was close with them personally before they even recorded. In fact, when their very first album came out, it came out and it was sent to radio stations and to the press. It came out with a review that I had written for them.
Oh, how funny.
Of the English import.
And as an aside, I had just started in college radio when the album came out, and I played I Will Follow on college radio when it first came, before anybody knew who U2 was. So I probably read your review.
Probably. It was in all the albums that went to radio stations. So in any case, I don't have a relationship with them anymore, but I did for a very long time. And I went to their show. Just, they weren't on my label, but I went to the show because I love their music. And who's there but Frank Sinatra?
Wow.
And someone thought, oh, this would make a good photograph and a good, a good little story. The first president of Reprise and the current president of Reprise.
Uh-huh. So I
met him. But he was already gone. He was, his mind was, at that moment at least, a lot of times when people, as they age, sometimes they're very lucid and other times they're not. And then they come back, they're lucid again. The moment I met him, he wasn't lucid.
Oh, that's too bad.
But after he passed away, who comes to me but Celine Dion? Well, it was through her husband. Her husband came to me and he said, we're doing an album of duets, and we want to do a posthumous duet with Frank Sinatra.
Ooh.
And they wound up naming the album, as it turned out, but for that song. So I thought to myself, I wasn't really a big Frank Sinatra fan musically. My father loved Frank Sinatra. My mother and father, both of them, loved Frank Sinatra. All their friends liked Frank Sinatra from when they were kids. And it used to be playing in the house all the time when I was young, and I hated it. Absolutely hated Frank Sinatra. I have like incredible Frank Sinatra stories from when I was a kid, not having met him, but things that happened in my life about it. They'll be in my memoir I'm writing now.
You are? Oh, good.
I am.
Yay.
Yes.
Oh, that's the best news I've heard today.
Oh, good. Well, I'm not going to tell my wonderful Frank Sinatra / mafia story on the radio right now.
Okay.
But I'm going to say that because of my parents, I don't drink beer. Because they liked it. Because of my parents, I never smoked a cigarette in my life because they liked it.
Wow.
So, I was, definitely pushing back against them. And because of them, I didn't like Frank Sinatra. So here I am, the head of his label, not liking his music. However, when Celine Dion, who had the reputation of having the greatest voice in the world, when she wanted to do a posthumous duet with Frank Sinatra, I thought, okay, that's great. I mean, here's this woman with this amazing voice and huge sales base. It'll be wonderful. So I said, I gave permission. Then the tape comes in and it starts with her. And I'm thinking, this is Celine Dion. And then on comes Frank Sinatra. She sounded like a little mouse compared to this gigantic lion.
Really?
And suddenly I thought, my God, this guy's voice is amazing. Why did I never listen to it? I then became a Frank Sinatra fan.
Oh, how funny. Wow.
Right, not a Dion fan, though.
No, I never was either. And I wasn't a Frank Sinatra fan either. In fact, when he died, I was on the air at 91X in San Diego, an alternative station. I couldn't reach the program director, and I'm thinking, what do I do? Do I play Sinatra on 91X? So I played the cake song, Frank Sinatra. Cake, the band Cake, who's wonderful.
Oh, okay.
Has a song.
I was suggesting My Way by Sid Vicious.
Oh, no, I could have done that. But the band Cake, who I love, has a song called Frank Sinatra. So I played that. And then later on, my boss said, oh, you could have played Sinatra. Like, all right. I was trying to follow the rules. So anyway.
Right.
But we started.
Who were you working for then?
91X, it was Brian Schock, was the PD.
Oh, Brian, of course. Great guy.
Yeah. I think he's in North Carolina now. Some people are still working. Unbelievable. So, Howie Klein, we started talking about Mo Austin, who passed away. Had you spoken to him recently? Had you been in touch with him?
Hadn't been. I hadn't been in touch with him in a long time. The last time I saw him was a few years ago, and he asked me to do something for his granddaughter, for one of his granddaughters, and I couldn't get it done.
Oh.
It was basically It was kind of a weird request. It had to do with getting her a job with a politician, and I just couldn't do it. I tried, but I couldn't get it done. Hmm. And I felt really bad about it, and I felt really terrible. I had never spoken with Mo again.
Oh, that's too bad. That is too bad. Yeah. Well, I didn't want to.
We were not personally close.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it wasn't like, you know, I was part of the team that helped Mo build Warner Brothers. I came much later than that.
Right.
So, you know, I really loved and respected him, but it wasn't like, you know, we were pals or anything like
right.
that. I was more, you know, I had more of a relationship with Lenny.
Right.
We were, you know, a little bit closer in age for one thing, and he always wanted to talk about music, it's per se, which wasn't really the kinds of discussions I had with Mo. So, and because I'm really, you know, so excited about the music and,
right.
and Lenny was, we wound up bonding much more. And I remember this one time, I'm going to tell this one great story
okay.
if you want to hear it.
Yeah.
I was sitting in Lenny's office. So Mo and Lenny had a attached office, like a big suite. And in between it was a bathroom. So there was a door from Mo's office into the bathroom and then a door from the bathroom into Lenny's office.
Sure.
So they could go back and forth without going out into the hallway. So I was sitting with Lenny and talking. I don't remember which band it was. We were talking about one of the bands. I was trying to persuade him to get behind, I don't know if it was Belly or Bare Naked Ladies, but one of our bands. And all of a sudden, Mo sticks his head in and he says, I need you two to come in here. So we walked into his office, and he's on the phone. He motions us to be quiet. He has the phone on speaker, and he's on the phone with what was called in the office New York,
okay,
which means the corporate headquarters.
Right.
Right. He's on the phone with New York, and I'm going to cut it a little bit short. The gist of it was they ordered him or whoever, whichever you know, pencil pusher he was talking to from the. We had a part of the company that was only there to work Wall Street. So he was a very, very senior guy, and his job was to work Wall Street and to make sure that our stock would always rise.
Mm-hmm.
Because all the executives, that's how they got their money. It was based on stocks rising. So it was a very, very important job. And I think it was him who was telling Mo that he had to drop Eric Clapton. because Clapton had just had a couple of albums that were not big.
Right.
Now this guy wasn't aware that Clapton's deal was based on how well the records did. So it wasn't like we're paying Clapton. It wasn't like Madonna.
Okay.
Where no matter how the record does, she's going to get like, you know, tens of millions of dollars. That wasn't the way Clapton's deal worked. Clapton's deal was a very, very fair deal. When he did well, he made a fortune. When he didn't do well, he didn't get a lot of money.
Okay.
We were not in a position where we were going to lose on him.
Gotcha.
But this guy, in any case, was demanding that Mo drop Clapton. Mo told him, and this is why he wanted me and Lenny in there, because uh-huh. he wanted us to see how you handle New York in this kind of a case. And he didn't use any foul language or anything like that, but he said it in a way that this guy was never, ever, ever going to bring up to him to drop an artist. It was never going to happen again, and it never did happen again.
Hmm.
And it really helped me, because in later years, I had gotten orders from New York to drop Joni.
Oh, God.
To drop several of, I don't want to go through all of them, but to drop several of our most wonderful artists that had been with us, you know, and had been so important to us. And, you know, not everybody has a hit on every record.
No.
It doesn't happen that way.
Right, and Joni Mitchell is a perfect example. I mean, she put out a lot of records that didn't have hits on them, but she's Joni Mitchell.
And she has a catalog that people
will buy
forever.
Always.
And
That's
do
right.
continue to buy forever.
That's right.
I mean, Joni Mitchell, one of our most precious artists, hopefully she's not listening to this, because I never even told her about
Ooh.
This. But you know, they told me, you know, I said, there's a way to do this. If you want to drop her, just fire me. Fire me and go drop her. But while I'm here, she's never being dropped. Wilco was another one.
Uh-huh.
It was the same story, who they did drop, like, the day I left.
Wow.
But there were others as well. I mean, Chaka Khan was another one. They said, get rid of her. You know, it's never going to happen. Never, never, never. So that was something that I that thank God I learned from Mo. By the way, the next Clapton record that came out was the Unplugged album.
Oh wow!
I just want to say a little thing, something about the Unplugged album.
Uh-huh.
So the biggest live record in the history of the world.
Yeah.
The first record to go diamond. So
wow.
there was you know, gold record means 500,000 sold in the United States. Platinum means 1 million sold in the United States. Diamond meant 10 million. This was the first record. It wasn't the only one, but it was the first day that they started certifying records diamond. Unplugged was one of them. And Unplugged is the kind of record that keeps the doors of a company open all by itself.
Right.
So and not just in the United States, in every one of our territories, every territory where we had Clapton, that was the biggest record of the year. And we didn't have to, every other record that we sold was gravy. Every record was gravy because all we needed was Clapton. That's how big that was. Everything that we could, every new artist that we signed, the money was coming from Clapton. And yet New York, right before we released it, we're ordering Mo Austin to drop Eric Clapton.
Wow. That's wild. I wonder what everyone would say today. Maybe it's like, okay, time for Eric to stop. But back then, right. Oh my God.
Because they would say, well, if Mo was wrong, he should have dropped that fashion. But, you know, I'll tell you something. I spent a lot of time with Eric Clapton over the years. He never, ever said one remotely fascist thing. He never hinted at it.
Uh-huh.
He, you know, I mean, there was nothing about him that syncs up with what, you know, the stuff I read in the papers about him now. So I don't know what to make of it.
Maybe he started watching Fox. You know, that's poison to a lot of minds. Who knows?
Who knows is right.
Who knows?
By the way, I would say the same thing about Morrissey, you know, who I knew much, much better than I ever knew Eric. I mean, Eric, it was always about business. Morrissey, we had a social relationship as well as his relationship. And again, you know, he has the things that the media says about him now is unrecognizable to me as the Morrissey that I knew, you know, who I spent, you know, untold hours with both in the U.S. and in the U.K.
Hmm.
And I never heard him. I mean, he was the opposite of the stuff that they say about him now. I mean, is he odd and quirky? You bet.
Yes.
I mean, is he like kind of out of his mind? Yeah. All that kind of stuff. But in terms of like being a fascist and being a racist, no, not even close. Now, I don't have a relationship with him anymore. I haven't talked to him in years and years and years. I can't say that, you know, he changed or didn't change. I have no idea. I can just say with my experience with Morrissey, he has never, ever uttered a racist or a fascist word ever. And it was inconceivable to me that could be the case.
Well, that's good to know. I mean, we hear things now. I just lost it. Oh, Roger Waters. He had a show here in Miami this week. There was a full page ad in the Miami Herald from, I forget, one of the Jewish, big Jewish groups, basically saying, take your anti-Semitic and racist attitudes elsewhere. Roger Waters has been shooting his mouth off. You know, I love Pink Floyd, but I don't think I'd pay to go see him in concert now.
Yeah. So I never knew him. Mm. I was a big fan of their very first record, and I hired them to play at my school.
Right.
I met them back in those days. You know, that we're talking about like See Emily Play, that the earliest
really
of Pink
early,
Floyd.
Right.
And I but I had no relationship with them whatsoever.
Yeah.
So I couldn't talk about it.
Well, some of us when we get old, you know, take a right turn for whatever reason, I don't know. But
some of us left turn.
Yes, we do.
For every good reason.
Yes, we do. So Howie Klein, in the 10 minutes we have left,
I thought we were starting 15 minutes earlier, so
we did
talk about reminiscences.
Well,
and Mo.
We did. So I can't wait. I'm so excited you're writing a book. I've been wanting this for a long time, so good. This is great news. We had some other good news, you know, in election stuff while you were out. All of a sudden, Joe Biden started getting stuff done. Congress got stuff done. Joe Manchin comes through with a very, very build back smaller bill. That who knew? I mean, that came out of left field.
Build back worse, but build back smaller, it works.
Right. It is much smaller. But at least there's some good stuff in there. And there's finally some money going towards climate change mitigation, right? Towards something. So there, it wasn't nearly enough, but some good things happened. And it seems like with the Supreme Court's ruling on the Dobbs case overturning Roe v. Wade, all of a sudden sentiments have changed in the country. Yep. And enthusiasm among Democrats has picked up a bit. So people are fighting back, right? So it's a different atmosphere than it was a month ago before you left.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if it's up now or it's going up, but I just did a post that said from the red wave to the red ripple, are we going to have a blue wave next? And you know, the idea is that it started off, and you know, on the media narrative was, for various reasons, the Democrats were going to lose dozens and dozens of seats.
Yep.
And that narrative is shot to hell now. I mean, the Democrats might gain seats. They're certainly going to gain seats in the Senate, and they might gain House seats, or lose a bare minimum.
Right.
Now, that's not to say that they're going to lose, that they are or aren't going to lose control of the House. No one knows.
Right.
Literally, no one knows. The media is still pushing a narrative that now they will still lose it, but by more narrow margins.
Right.
But you know, I look at these. I look at these individual districts and all the individual races one by one. I spent hours and hours doing it. And I would not predict that the Democrats are going to lose power. I have a list that I put up on my blog today I didn't count them, but let's say 35 seats mm-hmm. that are not predictable now. These are seats that the Republicans were playing offense on, and they're now playing defense on all these seats. These are seats in districts like the one in upstate New York where they had the special election the other day. And that's a red-leaning seat, but it's a swing district. So it's not a district where the Democrats can win just with Democrats, and it's not a district where Republicans can win just with Republicans. It's a district where the candidate who can put together a coalition of voters that includes their party plus moderates – and independents, that's who wins. So, for example, Obama won the district, mm-hmm. And then Trump won the district, and then Biden won the district.
Right.
It just
goes
district.
Back
that's what
and forth.
District
right.
is. And so the one in upstate New York, everyone said it was a shoe-in for the Republican, this guy Mark Molinaro.
Right.
He was going to win it, and even the DCCC polling showed that it was narrowing, but that the Republican was ahead. And the D-Trip was excited that they were even coming close. Turns out the Democrat won.
Yes.
And not by a hair.
Right.
He won it.
Although MSNBC yes. tried to make Republican it sound like, oh, my God, it's going to get so tight. It really was. It was like a 2 or 2.5, 3 points.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we're talking about a district with a slight Republican partisan lean. So this is what I put up on my blog today were other districts around the country like that district.
Okay.
So these are seats that the Republicans thought they were going to be able to pick up in this cycle, and now there's very, very good chance they're going to lose almost all of them. They're not going to lose all of them, but there are some that are you know, they look good on paper, but it's not going to happen.
Right.
But there is, I'm positive the Republicans are going to lose.
Right. Well, so I'm looking at the list now. The post is up, by the way, at downwithtyranny.com. But I see you have Florida 27 on that list. Now, we just had our primary this week, as you know. Annette Tadeo won. Yes. She won. Yes. We knew she would, but she won in that. You have that as a D plus one. She could win. She should
not
win.
The PVI. That's a partisan lean. So it's a slightly, it's lean slightly Democratic. Very, mm-hmm. very, very slightly. So that's a pure swing district. So Annette has to make her case
yes.
if she's going to win that seat. It's not going to be won by either the Democrat or the incumbent Republican just based on their party. It's
right.
That's not the way that district runs. We're talking about Miami, by the way.
Yes, Miami. That is Miami. And boy, do we need her. In fact, we were going to have her on together. And then you wound up leaving a week earlier. She came on the show. She sends her best. And now, you know, she won. She won by a huge margin. So she's positioned very nicely. Now we need to make sure that Miami gets out and votes for her.
But, yeah. Well, you know, we'll see. I mean, she's a talented politician, mm-hmm. and I think she has the capacity to do it. Marie Salazar is a little bit crazy, and we'll see. You know, we'll see. I mean, there are tapes of her saying whacked out things all over the internet.
Yeah. Well, so, Miami has just turned into, you know what? I read something this morning that I didn't realize. First of all, you know, the Proud Boys have taken over the Miami-Dade Republican Executive Committee. So it's they're batshit crazy down there. And I read something in a letter to the editor in the paper. Every judicial race in Miami-Dade County, the Jew was voted out. Not one single Jewish person won. And just that the inference was that something really weird is going on in Miami. And with the Proud Boys taking over the party, there's your evidence.
Yeah, so that's the kind of thing that will, along with the decision that the Supreme Court made about Roe v. Wade, along with Trump's legal problems, that's the kind of thing that will help the Democrats win more seats.
Definitely.
You know, they're not going to win deep red seats in Texas and Alabama and Mississippi. That's not going to happen.
Mm-mm.
And no one thinks it is, and no one is working towards it. What it does mean, though, is that seats like the district in New York, the 19th district, and the 35 districts that I listed, or however many it is, those are the seats that can swing one way or the other. Those are all winnable by either Democrats or Republicans, and those are the seats that Republicans are going to lose because of what's going on now.
Well, let's hope, because there are some names on here that, oh my God, better win. Like, you have Katie Porter's district is a swing district. Now, it was pretty red before.
It's a swing district, but it, you know, Katie doesn't really have a problem there.
She's amazing. But you have some other names here, too, that, you know, that people should know. Some are more blue doggy, like Sharice Davids in I guess this is Kansas. But you also have Lauren Underwood. She's in Illinois. There are some very familiar names on here. So I encourage people to go to downwithtyranny.com. Read, it's the first post up right now, called From a Red Wave to Red Ripple, Will a Blue Wave Materialize This Fall? And know that our candidates in these races need our help, like seriously need our help.
And some of them even deserve our help.
Yes. Well, that's what I meant to say too. So, the
they
other
need the help. Some
yes,
of them, you know, I don't know that I want to like go out and, you know, Democrats can help Sharice Davids if they want. She's a conservative Democrat, so she's not the kind of person that I'm going to help.
Right.
Whereas Porter, on the other hand, she doesn't really need our help. She's got more money than anybody.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we should at least have her in our prayers.
Right. Now, most of the names on here that I recognize are blue dog, like Sean Patrick Maloney. He's on here.
I'm rooting for him to lose.
you got Abigail Spanberger and Josh Gottheimer. I mean, some of the ones that, you know, if the margins weren't so close, If we had more breathing room, then I'd be there with you and say good riddance. But we need, you know, I hope that the Democrats can hold on to the House and the Senate. And it's looking pretty good on the Senate side.
Yeah, well, I'm hoping they can hold on to both, but without Josh Gottheimer.
Yeah, I understand that. I do. Howie Klein, I do want to ask you, we're going to go into overtime for just a couple of minutes here. See, even when we start early, we run late. The New York primary was also this weekend, and there was the 10th district was a clusterfuck. And so the guy who self-financed, Dan Goldman, who people had name and face recognition because he used to be an MSNBC contributor, and then he went on to be one of the attorneys representing the Democrats in the first impeachment. So people knew him. He had name and face recognition. But he went, this was a district that had like 10 people. Mayor de Blasio dropped out. Elizabeth Holtzman was in that race.
And she got votes as well.
She didn't get very many.
But she got enough to make a difference.
Yeah, okay. But Dan Goldman walked away with it over this New York assemblywoman whose name is escaping me right now, who was the progressive's choice.
New Line Now.
Thank you. Now. And now, no pun intended, she's on the Working Families Party ticket, and now they're saying that they could put her on the ballot? Could she be a spoiler there?
This is the thing that I'm going to break a little dirty news here.
Please.
When the Working Families Party endorsed progressives against conservative Democrats So Uline wasn't the only one. There were a number of them.
Right.
What they said was, if you don't win, you have to give up the nomination because we don't want to split the vote.
Oh.
Now, they may allow, because we're talking about a D plus, four, I think, D plus 47 or D plus 48 district. So there is. It doesn't matter if they split the vote. There's no Republican that's going to ever win that district in the history of the world, ever, no matter what. So maybe they'll let Uline do it. She's consulting with them now. Other candidates who had their endorsement told me specifically that they have to give it back if they lose. Some of them did lose, and we'll see. I mean, one of them also told me, "Hell with them. I have the nomination. I'm running."
Yeah.
So we'll see.
Right. I guess we'll see. All right. So primary season is almost over. I think the next races coming up are September 13th, Delaware, Massachusetts, New Hampshire, and Rhode Island, if that makes sense. But we're pretty much set, aren't we, at this point?
Yeah.
So it's on
Rhode
to the
Rhode Island has an important race.
What is that?
They have one congressional district that's really important, and then they have the gubernatorial race.
Oh.
So they have like progressives versus conservatives in both.
Gotcha. All right. Well, it's game on, and now all of a sudden it's a race again. Where we, you know, a month, 6 weeks ago, Democrats, I could say, were mostly pretty dejected, thinking we're fucked, and not in a good way. And
they're awful. I mean, the Democrats are awful, and they just have to be in their own minds to be a tiny bit less horrible than the Republicans.
Right.
And it looks like they're going to succeed at that. They'll still be awful. They just won't be as awful as the Republicans. That's their goal.
And unfortunately, that's been the case too often with this party. That's my frustration with the Democrats.
Yep.
It's
same
all
with me.
I
don't get really that frustrated anymore. I just look forward to the Democratic Party and the Republican Party each splitting in two.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
and it's long past overdue for that. So maybe what happens this year. Look, I'm watching DeSantis, who just is scarier and scarier by the minute. Did you hear what he said about Fauci?
Yes.
Oh, my God. To anybody who didn't, let me just
And that is very, very popular in the Republican base. So you say, DeSantis is very dangerous. Trump is very dangerous. It's true, they are. But who's really dangerous are their followers.
Yeah.
That's who's dangerous.
That's right. And now they are, some poll over the weekend shows DeSantis like routing Trump. Well, I've been saying this till my face turns blue. DeSantis is more dangerous than Trump. He's better educated, he's smarter, and he's probably meaner. Trump, I think, you know, says things because he has no filter. He's just stupid. But DeSantis is cruel and mean and calculating.
Right. Well, Trump is pretty calculating, too. But what he's calculating for is different from what DeSantis is calculating for. Trump is just trying to do self-aggrandizement and self-enrichment.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I think that DeSantis is an actual fascist.
I think so, too. I think so, too. And please, just for anyone who didn't hear it, this is what DeSantis said about Fauci.
People like Fauci saying that his lockdowns didn't cause any permanent damage to any young kids. I got news for you. It did. And we are going to reap those rewards across the whole country for years and years and years because they treated kids so poorly. And I'm just sick of seeing him. I know he says he's going to retire. Someone needs to grab that little elf and chuck him across the Potomac.
Oh, my God. That little elf. By the way, Fauci, I believe, is 5'7", and death sentence there is 5'9". And he has the nerve to call him a little elf. But the other thing, I dug this up today. This was DeSantis at the beginning of the pandemic. It wasn't Fauci's lockdown order.
I'm going to be doing an executive order today directing all Floridians to limit movements and personal interactions outside the home to only those necessary to obtain or provide essential services or conduct essential activities.
So death sentence ordered the lockdown here in Florida. He can't have it both ways. I'm so disgusted with this piece of crap. So I hope the rest.
You know what? I mean, again, yes, we're disgusted with DeSantis. I am too. Absolutely, no question. But who is voting for him?
I know. I'm disgusted by them, too. It's a reason why we're leaving Florida.
Where are you going?
Oh, I don't know. Probably Arizona. That's where we're looking right now. If somebody wants to hire me and give me a job that'll pay me a decent salary, I'll go almost anywhere as long as it is not too cold. But right now we're looking at Arizona. David's son lives there. So that's
where, in the Phoenix area or the Tucson area?
In the Phoenix area.
Too bad.
Yeah. David, you know, my husband graduated from, went to Arizona State. And so they have this weird juvenile rivalry. So I've never been to Tucson, though I think I would like it a lot better than Phoenix, and I have friends there. But he has this thing against Tucson because that's where the University of Arizona is, and he's an Arizona State guy. I don't get, I never understood that kind of, you know, juvenile rivalry. I just don't get it.
Phoenix is too hot.
Yeah. I know. Well, yeah, I'm looking for jobs in Tucson. So if somebody, again, somebody wants to hire me, you know, I'll be there. But we'll see.
And are we talking something that's imminent or something off in the distant future?
We will be moving sometime in the next couple of months. Basically, if you know anybody who wants to buy a house in Coral Springs, Florida, we're trying to sell it before the bank takes it. That's where we are.
Wow. Yeah. What about your daughter?
She's staying here for now. Here's the thing about Allison. She, you know, she's living with her boyfriend, which, and she's working and she likes her job. I think if we go out there the first time she comes and visits, she'll follow us. So I want to get her out of here too, but right now she's not going anywhere.
How old is she?
23.
Oh, okay. Well, she's an adult.
She's an adult now. I know. My little, you remember, do you remember when we had dinner at Bazaar in LA?
Of course I
did. And Allison was like 9 years old then. So I'm sure that's the picture you have in your mind of her, but she's 23. She's an adult. So, life goes on.
I know you'll miss her if you move.
Horrible. But, you know, got to do what you got to do. So, Howie Klein, I will let you go. It's so good to have you back. I encourage everyone, go to downwithtyranny.com and read. Go to the Blue America page. Donate to the candidates who are still in the race. Because if Blue America endorsed them and they won the nomination, now we really need to get behind them and make sure they win their races. I will not see you next week, but 2 weeks, we'll be back.
See you in two.
Okay, thank you, Howie.
Bye-bye,
Nicole. Bye-bye. And he's writing a book. Oh, I'm so excited about that. That's going to be a good one. Speaking of books, I just got the advance of, you know, I used to work on this radio show, The Mark and Brian Show. And Mark Thompson wrote a book that will be out sometime in December. So I got the advance of it, Don't Bump the Record Kid, My Adventures with Mark and Brian. Of course, me being the insecure person I am, I thumbed through to see, you know, where my section is. Not only is there no section, I think I got one mention in the back, in the acknowledgments, that I was one of a long line of producers. Let me just say, I'm the one who brought them to number one. All right, with that, we're done for the day. Tomorrow, I'm not sure what we're going to do, but something. And I will leave time for phone calls about the student loan forgiveness thing, because I really would like to know where you stand. Maybe we'll end the week with another music hall session. I don't know. We'll figure it out. And, oh, tomorrow, here's the big news. Tomorrow, we will get the redacted affidavit that set out the probable cause for the search warrant of Mar-a-Lago. The judge today said, I see the redacted version. We will release it. It will be released tomorrow. Tomorrow, it shall be released. Not today. Sorry, it's still Monty Python on the brain. with that, we're done. Thank you, everybody. Never mind. I will leave you with the news and see you tomorrow. Oh, that's not there. Hold on. I've got it here. I always got to make things difficult for all of us, don't I? All right. Now, I'll leave you with the news and I'll see you tomorrow. Thank you for listening, everybody. Bye.
It's time for Nicole Sandler. What's news from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
The Biden administration on Wednesday announced it would cancel up to $10,000 of student debt for millions of people and up to $20,000 of debt for low and middle income borrowers who received a Pell Grant. The loan relief will be limited to borrowers earning less than $125,000 a year or families earning less than $250,000. And the White House will extend the moratorium on monthly payments and interest for a final time through December 31st. President Biden saying 43 million people would benefit from a student loan plan, with 20 million Americans having their student loans fully wiped out. The New York Times reporting that because President Biden used executive action rather than legislation to forgive the loans, there will be legal challenges. But it's unclear who would have the standing to bring the case to court. So we'll wait and see on that. There's one other part of the order that's mostly being ignored, but will do the most good and have the biggest impact on low and middle income borrowers. Repayments will now be capped at no more than 5% of discretionary income, raising the amount of income considered non-discretionary, covering unpaid monthly interest, and forgiving balances after 10 years instead of 20. The Justice Department on Wednesday released a secret memo from 2019 detailing the department's reasoning for not charging the former president with impeding special counsel Robert Mueller's investigation. The memo says that Trump's actions, including firing his FBI director and pressuring White House counsel to recant testimony, did not amount to obstruction of justice, particularly since Trump, quote, reasonably believed the investigations impeded his work as president. Oh, please. Now, in response to the search warrant executed at Mar-a-Lago, Donald Trump's legal team, such as it is, has until tomorrow, Friday, to explain why a federal judge should appoint a special master to oversee the review of evidence taken from Mar-a-Lago during the search. Trump's so-called lawyers already appeared to concede that he unlawfully retained more than 700 pages of classified documents. Meanwhile, the Washington Post is reporting that about two dozen boxes of presidential records were never transferred to the National Archives. But in Trump's final days in office, he kept them in the residence, despite his then-attorney, Pat Cipollone, determining that they needed to go to the archives. Just amazing. And today, Thursday, is the deadline for the Justice Department to turn over their redacted affidavit justifying probable cause for the Mar-a-Lago search warrant. And then the original magistrate judge in South Florida will determine whether or not to release the redacted affidavit. Stay tuned. In other news, a federal judge in Idaho on Wednesday blocked part of a state abortion law that would have let authorities arrest doctors for terminating a pregnancy that threatens a woman's health. The Idaho law, scheduled to take effect today, bans abortions except in cases of rape, incest, or when a woman's life is in danger. On Tuesday, a Texas judge blocked enforcement in the state of the administration's guidance requiring hospitals to provide emergency abortions, even in states that ban the procedure. Obviously, a lot more to come on that subject. The Uvalde, Texas school board voted unanimously Wednesday to fire the now former police chief, Pete Arredondo, who's been widely blamed for the 77-minute delay before officers finally confronted the gunman who killed 19 children and two teachers at Robb Elementary School back in May. The decision came after an emotional hearing in an auditorium filled with about 200 people, including parents of some of the murdered children, who are all demanding accountability. Arredondo was placed on administrative leave back in June. The superintendent recommended firing him in July. He did not attend the meeting last night, citing death threats. But his lawyer said it was patently false to say that he was the incident commander because officers from many local, state, and federal agencies had responded to the shooting. Trigger laws in three states take effect today: Idaho, Tennessee, and Texas. They ban abortions with very few exceptions. On Friday, North Dakota's trigger law that bans abortions in most circumstances will take effect. And on Saturday, in Oklahoma, a new law enacting higher criminal penalties for performing illegal abortions will also go into effect, adding to their already tough laws prohibiting abortion. The laws will impact about 10 million people, of reproduction age across those five states. And finally, according to new federal survey data, marijuana and hallucinogenic use among young adults reached an all-time record last year. 43% of 19 to 30-year-olds had used cannabis 20 or more times over the previous year. That's up from 34%. And they also found that nicotine vaping and excessive alcohol consumption also rose, but cigarette smoking and opioid abuse dropped. So there's that. And that's just a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is fully listener supported and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com and please click on that donate button.